ATC is go.
Pegasus is go.
ATC is go.
Copy, us is go.
Houston flight is go.
Pilot go.
STM is go.
Safety comms is go.
STE is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director, NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Site Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people
on RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot and Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. It's the Friday night edition of the show, 7th of October. Welcome to it. Hello, Diane.
Hello, Craig, and how are you this evening?
I'm good. You're just busy over there banging away at your keyboard.
We're always busy, right?
There's always something going on.
That's true.
I mean, that's just the way it is, you know, and you're working right up to the last possible second.
Something. So many things are going on, especially, you know, here in my state of Florida.
Well, yeah, your state of Florida and the rest of the world. In fact, I happen to know for a fact that you were just putting some touches on your op-ed for next week.
Yes, it's about the Hurricane Ivan that hit our West Coast really bad and actually affected everyone in the state to some degree, but not nearly, you know, what happened on the West Coast. However, my article is going to be a two-parter. First, I'm doing the hurricane itself leading up to Biden's couple of hour visit. He gave us so much time, you know, he had so much time to spare. And then the second part, the following week, will be on him and everything that has happened since.
Hey, you should feel lucky that he was able to squeeze Florida in between pudding and nap time.
I know. Well, the biggest thing is he went to Puerto Rico, a commonwealth, before he came to the state of Florida. And some other, you know, things that he did that he didn't expect to do that are coming back to bite him.
Things he did, things he said. It's a mess. So it's a two-parter, part one next week, part two the week after.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we got all that to look forward to. I don't know what I'm doing in 2 weeks, but I do know what I've got coming up next week. I'm dealing with the new Prime Minister of Italy.
Trump in a dress.
Yeah. She's a very interesting woman, but I'll tell you something. The liberal media is freaking out and melting down. They're just beside themselves.
Oh, well, of course. That's, you know, without saying.
Well, she's a conservative and, you know, that's...
Well, it's just the world is changing. I hate to tell the liberals.
Yeah, well, you know, they got nobody to blame but themselves. I mean, really, when you nail it down, and it's not just here, it's everywhere. You know, their policies are failing, and they're driving countries into economic ruin.
Yeah, but the only thing we have to watch out for is that old saying, you know, come election time, it's not who casts the votes, it's who counts the votes.
Well, that's true, but we'll know in about a month.
Yep. Absolutely.
November 8th.
I mean, all indications are saying it should be a red wave across the board, House and Senate. But again, depends who's counting it.
Yep. Well, wait and see. November 8th is the big night. And of course, you and I will be live for that coverage. So,
yes.
We got all that to look forward to. And it'll probably be one of those bleary-eyed late nights.
I'm guessing it will be. especially in races that are pretty close, like Pennsylvania, which is key. If we take back Pennsylvania in the Senate, the Democrats lose the Senate, and the race is getting very nasty between Fetterman and Oz, who is now within the error of margin. As he is coming across like Biden, he had a stroke at the beginning of the campaign, and he has shown definite cognizant decline.
Well, and the other big race to watch on the Senate side of things is in Georgia with Herschel Walker. That one's getting pretty nasty, too.
Yes, absolutely. So we might have another long night, Craig.
Yeah, well, we'll be here. You know, we'll have coffee made. We'll have, toothpicks to keep the eyes open. we'll do whatever it takes, and we'll stay on the air as long as need be, or as long as we possibly can. You know, if it stretches into one of those 2 a.m, 3 a.m. deals, I've got a whole different job I got to do starting at 2:30 a.m. So, we'll wait and see what happens. But hopefully we'll be able to bring you some good, positive results well before that. So,
And I think we're going to call it right, like we've called it since we've been doing these. Every election we've called before the main talking heads.
Well, we keep a pretty good eye on it. We've got a pretty good read on what's going on and what the trends are, and we know where the different pockets of Republicans and Democrats are in key states, so we can kind of watch that real close, and we're able to do that and bring those results to you, hopefully a little bit ahead of the main networks, including Fox News.
Yeah. Well, Fox News, I'm getting a little more disgusted with by the day, because they still keep calling the illegals migrants.
Yeah,
well, some of the commentators will say illegal migrants, but they're not migrants.
Nope, they're aliens.
They're aliens. It's an invasion of our southern border, and the sooner people accept that as fact, the better off this country will be.
Well, you know, they're not going to change. Fox News is not going to change. They're going to continue to call them migrants, and they're going to continue to call this country a democracy. So, you know, you either get over it, or it drives you crazy. Diane's well on the crazy train right now. So,
yeah, in a way, because it's very annoying when you're the only station that even leans in our direction doesn't get the basic fundamentals of this country correct.
No, they got to play semantic games.
Yeah.
You know,
so that does get a bit annoying.
I can ignore that because I know the truth. You know, and look, it's either that or you get to watch CNN or MSNBC. So
now, well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with CNN now that they're trying to go mainstream with some firings that recently made.
I'll tell you, I think it's too little, too late. And that's a topic for a different show. You know, I mean, we'll have to bring that up, and I might do a piece on that coming up down the road. I don't know.
But, okay.
You know, we'll look into that. But right now, let's get into some of the topics that are real top of mind for a lot of people today, including OPEC. OPEC has announced that they're going to cut production by 2 million barrels a day.
Right. And, you know, here... That happened after Biden went on bended knee over there, begging them not to do that, begging the Saudi princes, please don't do that. They went ahead and did it. And you want to know something? They actually, in a way, did us a favor by doing that, because now Biden, who has already depleted our national reserves to some degree of much needed oil, we are going to have to go back to drilling in this country, especially since the U.S. Oil and Gas Association actually mocked Biden to that effect, that, ha ha, look what you did. Well, now you need us.
You know, it's very interesting, because not only did Biden go over there to Saudi Arabia and beg on bended knee not to cut production, he went over there and begged them to increase production.
Right.
And, You know, every election seems to have its own October surprise, and usually it's one party springing an October surprise on the other party. In this case, Joe Biden sprung the October surprise on his own party, because I guarantee you the Saudis waited until October to make this announcement.
Oh, of course they did. They're not stupid. Of course they did. And they have no love of Joe Biden. You know, they actually respected President Trump, because remember, he kind of brokered some kind of talks, basically, not an agreement, but talks between Saudi Arabia and Israel.
Right.
So they're not as far left, if you will, as some of the other Arab countries. The Saudi prince, the one that will be king, I mean, he was Western educated. He's not a stupid man. And he can see the writing on the wall. And that we all have certain common enemies, in this case, Iran, in the case of Saudi Arabia and Israel. So, you know, Biden going there and trying to maneuver them into something that they, in a way, are playing also to right. their benefit.
Well, and let's keep something else in mind. For those of you listening out there, you know, and how can these two, how can Craig and Diane be defending the Saudis, you know? Look, the Saudis have an atrocious human rights record. We all know that, okay?
Yes.
But one thing most people don't understand is the Saudi royal family is split down the middle. Now, there's one faction that wants to cling to that horrible human rights record. The other half of the royal family wants to move forward and try to get into the 21st century and recognize that a lot of those atrocities that they've been harboring for all these years need to be done away with. So it's a very weird situation over there when you talk about the royal family, and you have to understand that it's split in two. So, you know, yes, they have a lot of work to do when it comes to human rights. Yeah, that's very true. But you can't paint the entire royal family with a broad brush.
No. And, you know, what they actually did was force Biden to say he's going to release 10 million more barrels of oil from our strategic reserves to combat rising prices.
Yeah.
But he can't do it. He cannot do that because we're basically right on the line now of crossing over into, you know, depleting to a dangerous level. And that's not, you know, going to bode well. So what else is Biden going to do? He's going to scale down the sanctions we have on Venezuela to allow more pumping and more buying from us of oil that's actually rated the world's dirtiest oil.
Yeah, so let's look at that. Let's look at that as a big chunk and cut it up into pieces. Okay. Let's talk about the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, the SPR. Mm-hmm. We are now at a 40-year low.
Right.
All right, so that's dangerous. That's a national security issue. All right, because that was never meant to offset high oil prices. That's not the reason we have a strategic reserve.
Exactly. Now,
Biden says he's going to release, what, a million barrels? No, how many barrels a day?
He actually said he was going to release total 10 million.
10 million. Okay. 10 million barrels. Now, the Saudis are cutting oil production by 2 million barrels a day.
Well, Craig, let me correct that. 1 million barrels per day he's going to cut.
Okay. So 1 million barrels a day.
Right.
All right. So Biden is going to release 10 million barrels total. That's 10 days worth of oil produced by Saudi Arabia. 10 days.
Right.
Now, that's not going to make a very big dent
in
the price. It's going to make a big dent in our strategic reserve, but it's not going to make a big dent in the price of oil.
Right. And the reason that's so dangerous is because the situation now with Russia and Putin, we might very well need that oil.
Right. Now, let's look at the other part of that equation. He wants to buy more oil from Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's dirty oil, as you said. It's a very heavy crude oil, so it takes a lot more refining, which causes right. a lot more carbon footprint. All right? But here's the other thing. He's lifting sanctions on Venezuela in an attempt to get more oil from Venezuela. Venezuela is a communist country. So he's lifting sanctions on a communist country that hates us.
Not only that, he's lifting sanctions on the very communist country whose dictator Maduro has now opened all his jails and sent them all over here to our southern border.
Now, I'm not an expert in these things. So, Diane, you correct me if I'm wrong. But isn't that rewarding a communist dictator for sending his miserable prisoners into our country illegally? Isn't that a reward to Maduro?
It's worse than that, Craig. It's aiding and abetting an enemy.
Well, that would be treason.
Exactly.
I'm not an expert in that either, but, you know, from what I've read, that's treason.
Yes, it is. Because Maduro has actually admitted that he's releasing these people out of jail, and suddenly we get an invasion at our southern border of Venezuelan men.
Yeah,
men.
Yeah, it seems to be
put two and two together.
Yeah, it seems to be not such a good thing for us.
That's putting it mildly.
You know, I mean, this whole thing with oil is coming at the worst possible time. For Democrats, it's happening exactly 1 month ahead of the midterm election. Now, prices at the pump have already started to inch back up. Well, on this news from OPEC, they're going to skyrocket up.
Yeah. And I mean, it's great as far as, you know, the people realizing who is causing all these problems. But some of the PR press people, like, you know, Miss Medusa herself, said, you know, we should all be very grateful. Look how the prices have come down under Biden. Well, hello, the prices went up because of Biden.
And they didn't come down as far as they went up.
No. No. And people, you know who I'm talking about. I'm sorry, but I call her Miss Medusa.
Karine Jean-Pierre.
Yes.
Speaking of Karine Jean-Pierre, Biden made the announcement yesterday that he's going to dip back into the Strategic Oil Reserve. So, no, wait a minute. He made that comment, not yesterday, he made that comment on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Tuesday, during the White House press briefing, Jean-Pierre was asked directly by a reporter, will Biden go back into the Strategic Oil Reserve and release more barrels of oil? And her answer was an emphatic no. There is no plan to release any more oil from the Strategic Reserve. 24 right. hours later, we're releasing oil from the Strategic Reserve.
Right. But the best thing, even when she did that, the best thing was that the White House is still blaming Putin for the rising gas prices.
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's just ludicrous.
Yes,
so
it is.
We're going to see how this all pans out, but be ready to spend more money to put gas in your car. And you know, it's going to affect a lot of things. It's going to affect all the prices because everything you buy at any store you go to, I don't care if it's a grocery store or the shoe store, everything has to arrive there by something that burns petrol.
In other words, the supply chain is again going to be affected. And if you think, you know, you're going to have shortages of toilet paper again, that ain't the only thing you're going to have shortages of.
Well, and the inflation's going to skyrocket because, you know, if it comes by truck, if it comes by train, if it comes by ship, it's all burning diesel.
Well, not only that, you're going to have the feds coming in trying to lower the raise the interest rates again to try to lower the inflation. So you're going to have all these, different parts working against each other. And the only ones that are going to suffer are we, the people.
Yep. So we got all that to look forward to. Now, you mentioned the situation at the border and the situation with the Venezuelans releasing their prisoners into our country. Well, there's been kind of a new development that came about with DACA. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals has stricken down DACA.
Yes. And that was, that was pretty surprising. But Biden is furious about that. He's, lashing out at everybody. How dare they do this and whatever. But people have to forget that this program was basically legally implemented under Obama.
Right. Well, under the Obama-Biden regime is where DACA came from. And you're right. Biden's all pissed off because, how dare you get rid of DACA? Now, do we know for a fact that he knows what DACA is, or does he think DACA is a flavor of ice cream?
He probably thinks it's a flavor of ice cream or the pudding du jour. But the problem is what they're saying, the numbers involved, they're claiming it's 600,000 that are currently protected by DACA. But I believe it's into the millions.
It's got to be into the millions. 600,000? Come on. I don't buy that number for 1 minute.
No, I don't either. But people, you have to understand, this came from the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court, and it was a 3-judge panel that actually determined that the Obama administration actually lacked the authority to institute the very program he did, in other words, DACA.
If only you or I had said something at the time.
like our voices matter, right?
Well, but I mean, you wrote articles about it. I wrote articles about it. We talked about it on this show many, many, many times back when DACA was fresh and new. This was illegal. It was unconstitutional. The president doesn't have any authority to unilaterally do such a thing. Now, and that came, if I remember right, that came shortly after Obama said, well, there are certain things I'd like to do, but the Constitution prevents me. I'm paraphrasing, but, he was all upset because constitutionally he couldn't do certain things that the Democrats wanted him to do. And one of those things was DACA. Then he turned around and did it.
Yeah, well, I loved how Biden actually blamed this. In this particular quote, today's decision is the result of continued efforts by Republican state officials to strip DACA recipients of the protection and work authorization that many have held for over a decade. Well, you know what? Some of them are good, decent people. And yes, some of them have had certain protection and everything for over a decade. And it's in this particular area, folks, that Craig and I disagree a little bit on something.
Yeah.
We both agree on the numbers are way underinflated by Biden.
Right.
However, I get the 600,000. I know it's more. But I also, in a way, not all the DACA recipients, came here as 16 and 15-year-olds. Many, many, many of them came here as infants and very young children. This is the only country that they have ever known. They came with families, not young men of military age. They came with families who were trying to better themselves. Yes, they came here illegally, and they should be punished for coming here illegally. But what do you do really about children that came as babies? Think of this as their country. It's the only country they've ever known. How can you send Americanized people back to those shitholes?
I would send them back on buses, airplanes, and with a slingshot.
I'm not sure. I think there has to be a process of those who have really contributed to this country, who love this country. I think there's got to be some kind of, I don't know if you want to call it a lottery system or whatever, but you can't send, let's say, a DACA recipient who has graduated from Harvard medical school, who's going to be a brain surgeon, back to a third world, you know, crap hole. You just
I don't know. I don't see why not. I'll bet you those third world crap holes could use a good brain surgeon.
No, this is
Okay, here's where I stand on it. All right. Those kids were brought here illegally by their parents who broke the law.
Right.
All right. I say send them all back. I don't care what their situation is today. If this is the only country they know, well, then diversify their home country. Send them back. I mean, the minute, in my line of thinking, the minute you start making exceptions for this one, that one, and the other one, then you wind up setting a precedent by which the people that want more and more and more illegal aliens in this country will exploit whatever tiny little loophole they get, and they will find a way to keep more and more and more of them. If you bend the rules for some, you know, give an inch, they'll take a mile. You send them all back, no exceptions.
I have an idea, a way to work around that. The ones that have truly love this country, that are Americanized, they speak perfect English. They don't know any other country except this. If you're going to send them back, let them apply to come here legally and bump them to the top of the line there.
I agree. Now, see, there we can find happy ground. And what you do is you let them apply from the other side of the border.
That's okay.
And you know, one thing you and I do agree on is that we need to streamline the immigration system. There's no good reason why it should take 15 or 20 years for somebody who wants to do it the right way to do it the right way.
I agree. I agree. We need a whole rehaul of our immigration system. But the main thing with our immigration system is we have to keep out the people that offer nothing to this country.
Right. Right.
We've got to weed out the garbage, if you will, the young men of military age who think, you know, they're coming here with their hands out and you know, get their palms greased. No, we don't want them. But we do want some of those DACA students who really, you know, want to be here. And we also have immigrants, legal immigrants from other countries who are still sitting there waiting while the illegals are just flooding our borders.
I know. It's a bad situation. Now, here's another thought, and other people have raised this as a possibility, and I don't particularly disagree with it.
Okay.
Let a bunch of these DACA people, the younger ones, enlist in the military. Now, if they enlist in the military and they do a full tour and they are discharged honorably from military service, make them a citizen.
I agree. 100%.
I don't have any problem
there. That's another option.
Yeah, yes. I don't have any problem there at all.
Either do I. That's actually a very good option, because we rebuild our military, because right now our military recruitment is under the levels it should be because of all the woke crap.
Right. So, and we know a lot of these DACA people, a lot of these illegal aliens, they have no use for the woke crap.
Right.
You know, so let them join the military, let them go back over the border and apply and move them to the front of the line. And if they, you know, pass all their background checks and what have you, then, you know, give them a path to citizenship. But, you know, saying, well, we're going to keep these, but we're going to send these back. I mean, you get yourself into a mixed match and all of a sudden, you got loopholes, and the liberals will exploit that.
Well, we already have we already have a loophole at the southern border. Anybody can come in. The borders are open. The people coming through are saying they're open. Our border agents have no control because Biden and crew tie their hands. Right. It's like a free-for-all down there.
It is, and that's got to stop, too.
Immediately.
Folks, we've hit the bottom of the hour. That means we got to take a quick break, get a couple of station IDs in. We've got a couple of more hot topics of the day that we need to discuss before this show comes to an end. So stay with us. There's more Right Side Patriots after this.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sori. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi guys, Diane Sori from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on rspradio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sori at the Patriot Factor. It's Friday night. Gotta love it. Weekend staring us right in the face. If you miss any part of this show, just go to rspradio1.com. Tomorrow morning, you can click the podcast button, become one of the pod people, and listen to this show or any of the others.
Yes. They're all there.
They're all there, waiting to be listened to.
Yes.
And we're gaining pod people all the time.
Oh, yes, we are. And something that some people don't know, before we before we got our own radio station, we were on other radio stations. And you'll find us also on YouTube, on Spotify, and some other venues. They're older shows, but they're still there.
Look around. We're hiding, but you can find us.
We're all over the place.
We're everywhere. We're like the wind. We're everywhere. Okay, so over in the UK, that's kind of an interesting deal. They just got a new prime minister, just a month or so ago. Liz Truss, Prime Minister Truss. And she came out and made some announcements the other day that were really kind of interesting. What she wants is a new world order. Now I know what you good conservatives are thinking. Well, we've had enough of the new world order. But this is a little different, Diane. This is a new world order without a key component.
Yeah. And what it is, it's leaders of more than 40 European countries. They had talks in Prague at what they billed as a first meeting of a new political forum of nations. What this kind of is to counter the UN in a way, I think. UN, you know, useless nations. But what they're doing is trying to get the Europe's nations and others as well to stand strong basically against Russia. What they're doing is building a common strategy in response to Russia's war in Ukraine.
Well, I can't figure this out either. You know, is it a replacement for the UN? Is it a replacement or a partner to NATO? What exactly is this thing? And when it comes to strategy, okay, now, I think strategy, having a good strategy is a good thing, all right? And you'd be silly to disagree with that. But if this is a group that's going to put together a European strategy to stand strong against Putin and Russia, how are they going to implement these strategies when they have absolutely zero organization? I mean, this is just a bunch of people getting together in Prague. There's no staff. There's no organization. There's no teeth to anything. Well, how are they going to do this?
Yet. You got to, you know, end that with the word yet. It seems like they are trying to build, if not a, you know, what they're trying to build actually is a consensus, a joint consensus that they know they need economic reform. They know they need new sources of energy, but they also need the freedom to succeed. Right now, Europe is under, you know, the shadow of Putin. Is he going to set off a nuclear bomb? How many more gas lines is he going to cut off? What's going to happen with the oil? They're all, even though Europe per se is not at war with Putin, they are members of NATO, most of them. So that threat is always there, that they might be forced to actually go to war with Putin.
It's not really a cold war. It's not really a hot war. It's more kind of a lukewarm war.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I really don't know how to describe it, but obviously they're teetering on the edge. They don't want war, but, you know, Putin's calling the shots right now, and I guess maybe Europe, with you know, good help from the UK, you know, what they're trying to do is put together something that has some form of backbone or some sort of teeth to it where they can take the lead and dictate to Putin what goes on. I wish them well, but I look, do we really need another European club? I mean, we got the G8, we got NATO, we got UN,
What they're trying to do, yeah, we know they have all that, but what they're trying to do is rethink and reform the wider European order beyond the work of the EU and NATO.
All right.
And to me, it really sounds like they're trying to build a new type of UN.
Well, now, look, if that's what they're aiming for, if that's what they really want, I get behind that. Because the UN is absolutely useless. You call it the useless nations. I call it the United Nations of thugs, thieves, and despots. You know, and you can't count on the UN to do anything. They can't hold anybody accountable. They put some of the worst countries in some of the best spots on some of the councils that they have. I mean, it's just a bunch of thugs and thieves, as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. They need to get the hell out of New York, get the hell out of our country, pay their damn parking tickets on the way out, and go set up shop somewhere else.
Right. But, you know, there's sort of animosity to some degree still within the members of Europe itself. For example, the new British Prime Minister, Truss, she's not totally a friend nor a foe of Macron.
Right, and Macron's firmly behind this thing, as I understand it. I guess
he's one of the organizers of it.
Yeah, I guess he called Truss and said, come on, get on board. And she, well, okay. She doesn't really know quite what to make of Macron, and neither really does anybody else. I mean,
He runs both sides of the table.
Yeah, well, he does. But, you know, it was interesting. Obama was a great friend of Macron. Okay. Right. And then when Trump came into office, Macron had some not so nice things to say about Trump and kind of tried to give Trump the cold shoulder. But Trump being Trump, absolutely push Macron around on the world stage.
Right. And they are cozying up. This group is cozying up to certain nations more than others. For example, Norway. They really want Norway as part of this because they are now becoming a key supplier of energy to the UK. So Truss is sort of courting them.
Right. And aren't the Balkans involved in this too?
Yeah. Yeah. And so is Georgia and some of the former Soviet satellites. Basically, what this is I believe it's a show of solidarity against Putin. Is it an effective show? We don't know yet.
It's a show.
Yeah.
It's so new. You know, right. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, this thing is only in the formative stages. I mean, they're just basically they got together for a group photo. Okay.
Well, Zelensky actually took part in it. Ukraine actually took part in it via, you know, satellite links, whatever.
Right.
But I mean, it's an interesting concept for the reason that the UN is useless.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with trying to unite Europe, in a sense. They must keep their separate identities. That's what makes Europe Europe. But there's nothing wrong with forming a true European Union that will stand strong against the likes of Putin and China and others.
Okay, but I do have a problem with this group. As far as membership is concerned, you know, who else is in this thing is Erdogan from Turkey.
Yep. Yep.
Why?
Because I believe Turkey's part of NATO.
Well, I understand that, but I'll tell you what.
They invited all NATO members.
If you think you can trust Erdogan as far as you can throw a piano, you've got another think coming.
No, you can't. There's no way you can ever trust Erdogan. You got to... if he wants to take part in this, I think it'll be, you know, just a photo op taking part. Turkey runs very hot and cold. One day they're on this person's side, on the next day they're on this person in this country's side. You can't trust him.
Now, you just can't. Did you see the big group photo they took?
Oh, yeah.
There's... you know, how many you know, leaders are in this group? A lot. I haven't counted them, but only about six failed to get the blue dress or blue suit memo.
Well, those were the women. I mean, the women are dressed in different colors and skirt suits.
There's one in kind of a purple. There's one in kind of a chamois colored. You know, a couple of those women, but the other women have various shades of blue. Okay. Mm-hmm. Almost every man in the group has a blue suit, but there's a black suit and a gray suit, a couple of gray suits mixed into this.
Matter.
So apparently the memo didn't get out to all of them as to how to dress for this photo.
Well, I don't think there was any dress code for this. There's only seven women amongst all these, heads of state that are men, and what they wear to me doesn't mean a thing. It's what they say, what they do, what they implement, and do they keep to their word. I could care less what they're wearing.
I could care less, too, what they're wearing, but I care when I'm making a joke about it. You know, I mean, this is interesting.
Well, you're joke bombed.
Well, only to you. Only to you. This is interesting, though, to me, because if they can get this thing off the ground, if they can actually make something out of this that has some teeth to it, it's going to be very interesting to see Putin's reaction to it.
Right. And everything is an if, because Prime Minister Truss while she's, you know, there, she's in agreement. She has some trepidations about Macron. There are some other concerns concerning Northern Ireland and a couple of other things from other countries. I hope it succeeds because, you know, the UN is a joke. So I hope it succeeds and I hope it stays honorable.
And what are they calling it? The EPC or something like that? I think it's EPC.
Yeah. Something like that. It's just right now, it's just a summit on the Ukraine war.
Right.
And from there, they want to expand into some kind of joint European political community, basically.
Right. EPC, European Political Community. Yeah.
Yeah, they want to send a message of unity. And right now, it's a message of unity against what Russia is doing in Ukraine.
It's going to be interesting because, you know, Putin's got his handful right now. And this is just something else that's going to land on his plate. And I'll bet you within a couple of weeks, he is yelling at this thing. He's, you know, I'll bet you he's going to try and dismiss it as being illegal or, you know, something like that, because, you know, the last thing he needs is a whole bunch of European nations outside of NATO ganging up on him.
Yeah, well, Putin's not happy right now because his, what I call war of attrition is coming back to bite him.
Well, you know, Putin would be a lot happier if he quit wearing canvas underwear. I mean, this whole thing, he is just, it's almost like every other day he's coming out and making some absurd statement.
Yes.
Okay, and trying to project what he's doing on everybody else.
Well, the only thing I can say and the only thing that I hope is with the protests now ongoing in Russia and with men of military age fleeing Russia, almost 250,000 have fled so far. I just hope that his own inner circle, his surrounding military, that somebody do something to him. I hate to say take him out, but that might be the only way that this nonsense will end.
Right. So
he's very dangerous because when someone is losing, they will do anything out of desperation. And this man can very well set off a couple of tactical nukes in Ukraine, which very well, you know, a lot of people say we're already in World War III, but that will be World War III.
You know, it's one of those things we're going to have to keep a sharp eye on. And one of the ways that we do that around the world is with satellites. And, you know, we're talking about the Ukraine war. We're talking about Putin. We're talking about a lot of things that are going on in the world right now. And satellite imagery, even orbiting weapons, you know, this stuff is all in play right now. So how is space working in to this whole Ukrainian war situation?
Well, it's very simple. The war in Ukraine has actually underlined the growing importance of space to armies on the ground. And what that means is how space is aiding in the war. Basically, you know, through surveillance, through communications, through precision weapons. Basically, what we have is we're seeing the beginnings of a future, the future, I should say, of warfare in space. Because eventually what's happening on the ground is going to happen above us.
Well, and, you know, you look at the situation that we have right now, even as we speak this Friday night, you know, you've got surveillance satellites looking at everything. And the advancements in technology allow us to identify things on the ground from space down to about 6 inches in size. So we can get a pretty clear picture of weapon systems and things that are going on, troop movements, you know, that kind of thing. That's how we figured out that this Russian nuclear sub that that had been parked in the White Sea had disappeared a couple of days ago.
Right. And that's a very dangerous situation because, you know, that has the very tactical nukes on it that I'm talking about.
It's got what they call a tsunami nuke on it, yeah. Which is a nuke they can fire out of the submarine that detonates underwater right. And causes a tsunami, a massive tsunami on shore that would irradiate shoreland for miles and miles and miles. So,
the problem is Ukraine has very little shore. So they'd actually, if they did that, some of that fallout would head into Russia.
Right. You know, there's always that chance. But do you think Putin cares?
No, he doesn't care about his people. He only cares about his own fame and glory and whatever. But it's interesting that the head of the U.S. Space Force, a man by the name of General J. Raymond, he actually describes what's going on now with the communications and the strategy coming from above, basically. He's saying this is the first war where commercial space capabilities have really played a significant role, and that it's also the first major conflict in which both sides have become reliant on space. And to that, we also have to add independent people, because people like Elon Musk are giving their space technology, if you will, to put up satellites that are helping areas where Russia has, you know, destroyed the communications.
Yeah, this gets more interesting by the day. And you mentioned Space Force, the general that's in charge of that. There wouldn't be a Space Force were it not for President Trump. Now, a lot of liberals poo-pooed the idea of Space Force. Biden doesn't really particularly care for it. He doesn't really want to fund it very badly. But what we're finding out now with this war going on over there, you know, the Ukraine-Russian situation, is that space is a primary form of intel gathering. Now, think of it this way, too. You know, you hear a lot about hypersonic weapons, okay? And these are weapons that don't really have a warhead on them. They destroy by kinetic force when they hit. Well, those things have to come from space. We launch those into space, and then they use the speed they acquire outside of the atmosphere to come back through the atmosphere and slam into a precision target.
Right. And you also have to remember that right now there are 5,000 satellites in space. And
most
of them are operated for commercial purposes, but there are hundreds of dedicated military satellites that we, Russia, and China have orbiting the Earth. And one thing that people have to always remember, he who controls space controls the Earth. And
You know, we're watching them. They're watching us. Everybody's watching everybody. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not like it was back in World War II or Korea or even Vietnam, you know. Right. And, I mean, we had some satellite images, you know, when it came to Korea and Vietnam, but they were fuzzy. They were you couldn't really see much with them. The resolution wasn't that great. You know, not like it is today. I mean, resolution today is remarkable when it comes to satellite imagery. We're able to cover much more ground, much more rapidly, and with much greater resolution than ever before. We are seeing things that are happening on the ground like we're standing there looking at it.
Well, one example is there's a satellite image that has been made public of body sites, which contradicts Russia's claims that, oh no, there are no bodies there.
Yes, there are.
There's lots of them. And these are Russian bodies who were supposed to retreat, who got taken out by Ukraine's forces. Remember, they were in these cities doing terrible atrocities, committing war crimes. And Zelensky was able to rally his forces so much that they were able to retake cities that Putin, you know, claimed he annexed and whatever.
Right.
But they say, no, no, we got everybody out. No, I'm actually looking at a photo now of the bodies laying in the street, contradicting everything Putin has said. And these images came from satellites in space. So we're going to get a lot of truth coming from images from space that contradict almost everything Putin is saying.
You know, I've seen that image. And, you know, you could almost see individual shingles on rooftops in that image. And, I mean, that's pretty stunning compared to what we used to get, you know, from satellites. But now, my question regarding that particular image, are we sure that those are the bodies of Russian soldiers, or were those pedestrians trying to cross the street near a roundabout? Because you know how roundabouts are. You put one of those up somewhere where people don't expect it, and you got nothing but trouble.
This is on a main road, the one I'm looking at. You can see the rifles laying next to the bodies. This is no roundabout. This is a main avenue or thoroughfare, whatever you want to call it, in one of the Ukrainian cities.
Yeah. It's, yeah, I go back to when I was actually in college, and I took a history of World War II class. And one of the final days of classes that semester, they brought in a guy from military intelligence to talk to us about the differences in war technology. And this would have been the early 1980s, difference in war technology in the early 1980s compared to World War II. So this is 40 years ago. And that guy told us at that point, 40 years ago, we had military satellites orbiting that could take pictures, and if somebody was standing next to a vehicle and got their photo taken from that particular satellite, not only could they read the license plate number, but they could tell the color of the guy's eyes. Now, think of that 40 years ago compared to what we have today.
We've had this technology for quite a while. A lot of it has been kept secret for national security reasons, or so they say. But, you know, we're in the age of the internet. There's very few secrets that could be kept anymore.
Tougher and tougher.
Yeah. And they can't keep secrets like this. We know the truth of what Putin has done in Russia. And a lot of it has come from satellite imagery. A lot more will be coming from satellite imagery. But the main thing is, he who controls space controls the world. And again, it damn well better be us.
Space may not be the final frontier, but it's the next one when it comes to warfare.
Well, to me, it's the final frontier.
You know, this gets more interesting, and we're going to keep an eye, because, you know, on RSPRadio1.com, we have a technology page in there. And from time to time, we find stuff that fits in that goes towards what we're talking about right here in the final minutes of this show tonight. And so look for this stuff in the technology page, because a lot of the stuff we put in there, a lot of the AI stuff, a lot of the computing stuff, the quantum computing stuff, that all will eventually become part of the space program too.
Right. And a lot of it is part of the space program. It's things you don't hear about, things coming from JPL, things coming from other key NASA think tanks and bases of operation. And
well, and MIT, MIT.
And MIT, lots from MIT.
You know, they tend to dabble in technology from time to time.
Yeah, just a bit.
And dip their toe in the technology pool.
Yeah, but there's so much going on, folks, that goes on behind the scenes that the government doesn't want people to know about. Yet some of us can find some of these things out. We put them out there because you need to know the truth.
need to know how it affects everything that goes on in the world.
Right.
Well, folks, listen, we've come to the end of this show. Time has flown by.
Yes, it has.
Diane, we got a weekend staring at us. What do you say we get to it?
I say so. A weekend away from the computer. Maybe. Okay. Nighty night, folks.
Good night, everybody. Have a great weekend. We'll catch up with you on Tuesday. Bye-bye.